for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Rescue workers in Taiwan have used a crane to lift part of the wreckage of a plane that crashed outside Taipei. At least 25 people were killed in the crash. About 20 people are missing. The Transair Airways ATR-72 clipped a bridge and plunged into the Keelung River shortly after takeoff. The plane narrowly missed, plowing into several apartment buildings. Jordan executed two militants at dawn today, responding to the Islamic State's killing of a captured Jordanian pilot. The pilot was captured after his plane went down during a mission targeting the IS group in Syria. Authorities hanged Sajida al-Rishawi, an Iraqi woman sentenced to death for her role in a 2005 suicide bombing in Amman, and Ziad al-Karbouli, another Iraqi with ties to al-Qaeda. A Jordanian official spoke to the press.
We think with the cooperation between coalition members, we think with the well-being of the regional and international community, we think with the strength of our society and our military forces, yes, this evil can and should be defeated.
A video emerged online Tuesday purporting to show the pilot locked inside a metal cage and burned to death. Jordanian officials say the pilot apparently was killed a month ago. The Nigerian militant group Boko Haram is reported to have killed dozens of people today in a cross-border raid into Cameroon. A newspaper report says Boko Haram fighters attacked the town of Fotokol and conducted what the paper calls a massacre. Residents tell the French news agency militants slit people's throats. They say they also set fire to the town's main mosque. This is VOA News. Somalia says a U.S. drone strike on Saturday killed its target, senior al-Shabaab militant leader Yusuf Heeg. The government said today that Heeg died with other al-Shabaab commanders in the airstrike in the southern town of Dinsor. A source in the militant group confirmed Heeg's death to VOA. The AFP reports Sierra Leone is planning to reopen its schools on March 30th. Students in the country have been out of school for 7 months due to the Ebola epidemic. Also in Nigeria, election officials say they extended the February 8th deadline for distributing voter ID cards. They deny that they are considering postponing the election itself. Distribution of the cards has been delayed as Nigeria heads toward its February 14th elections. The Associated Press reports officials have agreed to extend Uganda's military presence in South Sudan for an additional 4 months because the situation in that country has not fully stabilized. The agreement was signed Tuesday in Kampala. Ugandan troops are helping the forces of South Sudanese President Salva Kiir put down a rebellion led by former Vice President Machar. Zimbabwe's 90-year-old President Robert Mugabe fell today after addressing supporters at Harare International Airport. He had just returned from Ethiopia, where he had received the rotating chairmanship of the African Union. AFP reports that he was quickly helped up by his aides and taken to a waiting car. President Barack Obama's choice to become U.S. Defense Secretary says he is inclined to support supplying Ukraine with lethal arms to fight Russian-backed insurgents. Ashton Carter made the comment at his Senate confirmation hearing today. An Egyptian court sentenced 230 activists, including a top liberal campaigner, Ahmed Duma, to life in prison today. The charges were involved taking part in violence that broke out during the country's 2011 uprising against ousted President Hosni Mubarak. 30 other defendants, all minors, were given 10-year sentences. 6 people died and about a dozen were injured late Tuesday when a railway train struck a sport utility vehicle outside New York City. The accident happened in the suburban town of Valhalla, New York. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe expressed concern about large fines imposed on newspapers in Bulgaria for publishing some stories concerning banks and businesses. Speaking in Vienna today, the OSCE representative on freedom of the media said the large fines imposed on the outlets may lead to censorship. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The Chadian army engaged in heavy clashes with Boko Haram militants along the Nigeria-Cameroon border on Tuesday. Chad says more than 200 Boko Haram fighters were killed in the battle. More fighting was reported in the area Wednesday.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Details coming up. Also in the news, Somalia says a U.S. drone strike on Saturday killed its target, a senior al-Shabaab militant leader. We'll have these stories plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. Music from South Africa and our daily features, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Somalia says a U.S. drone strike on Saturday killed its target, senior al-Shabaab militant leader Yusuf Digg. The government said in a statement today that Digg died with other al-Shabaab commanders in the airstrike in the southern town of Dinsor. A source in the militant group confirmed Digg's death to VOA Somali service. The Somali government says Digg, who was al-Shabaab's chief of external operations, was responsible for planning attacks inside and outside Somalia and was the brain behind the attacks. It says he planned explosions and suicide missions and was a central figure with al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab's attack outside Somalia include the 2013 assault on Nairobi's Westgate Mall, in which more than 60 civilians died, and a 2010 bombing in Uganda's capital Kampala that killed more than 70. The U.S. has targeted the al-Shabaab leadership in a series of airstrikes. In late December, the Defense Department confirmed that the U.S. strike killed the group's intelligence chief, Tahil Abdushakur. Al-Shabaab's supreme leader, Ahmed Abdi Godane, was killed in a U.S. airstrike on September 1st. Nigerian militant group Boko Haram is reported to have killed dozens of people in a cross-border raid into Cameroon. A newspaper in Cameroon's far north region says Boko Haram fighters attacked the town of Fotokol early today and conducted what the paper calls a massacre. Residents told the French news agency that militants slit people's throats and set fire to the town's main mosque. Cameroonian soldiers, backed by forces from Chad, eventually repelled the attack, killing an undetermined number of militants. Nigerian officials report today they have joined Chad in launching joint airstrikes on a large number of towns and villages now held by Boko Haram extremists. The targets include locations in and near the Sambisi forest, where Boko Haram forces have established camps. The report follows other accounts of Chadian ground forces fighting Boko Haram within Nigerian borders. And according to the reports, the Chadian army engaged in heavy clashes with Boko Haram militants along the Nigeria-Cameroon border yesterday. Chad says more than 200 Boko Haram fighters were killed in the battle. More fighting was reported in the area today. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
Witnesses say hundreds of suspected Boko Haram fighters crossed over from the Nigerian town of Gambaru early Wednesday and attacked border villages in Cameroon. Mal Musa Ledu Blaise, a Cameroonian journalist near the town of Fotokol, told VOA the militants have been provoked by Tuesday's attack on their positions in Gambaru by Chadian forces.
Ils étaient positionnés là-bas, donc les gens ont commencé à tirer sur eux à partir de Gambaru.
He says the Chadian army attacked Boko Haram's locations in the northern town of Gambaru after insurgents disguised as passers-by shot at hundreds of people and killed three of their soldiers in Fotokol on the border with Nigeria. He adds that the Chadians used their military helicopters to bomb Gambaru. Mal Musa says the insurgents have been attacking mostly Chadian military posts since they crossed over to Cameroon early Wednesday. He says Cameroonian soldiers have mobilized to help the Chadians fight the insurgents.
No, ils étaient en appui, mais ils ne sont pas entrés sur le territoire nigérien.
He says Cameroonian soldiers supported the Chadians from a distance but did not get into the Nigerian territory. He says there was no shooting between the Cameroonian army and the militants, but there was serious shooting between Boko Haram fighters and Chadians. Cameroon military spokesman Colonel Didier Bajek says Cameroonian and Chadian troops have been deployed to Fotokol to fight the insurgents. He says they will be able to engage Boko Haram until a regional force agreed upon at last week's African Union summit is operational.
De solidarité agissante. Le Tchad s'est tenu tout à fait disposé à nous soutenir immédiatement dans la lutte contre Boko Haram.
He says there will be very difficult moments for Boko Haram in the days ahead with the creation of a regional force of 7,500 troops against the insurgents. He says Chad and Cameroon reached bilateral agreements on how to jointly combat Boko Haram after Cameroon's President Paul Biya calls for international support to destroy the militant group and that Chadian and Cameroonian soldiers have been fighting the enemy together. African Union experts are expected to meet in Yaoundé Thursday to draw up strategies on how the force will operate. Chad supported Cameroon after President Paul Biya appealed for a coordinated international response to Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A media watchdog group is calling on the Nigerian government to ensure that international journalists are allowed to cover the February 14th elections. The Committee to Protect Journalists says a number of reporters are having difficulty getting visas to enter the country. CPJ says only a few days remain for journalists to enter the country and be accredited. Peter Nkanga is CPJ's West Africa representative. From Abuja, he spoke to VOA's Jody Kapawa about the difficulty journalists are having getting visas.
Truthfully, I have to tell you that CPJ's concerns are what everybody's concern should be when you want to see that a process is being followed and adhered to and is transparent and credible. And the process we are talking about now is the presidential elections coming up February 14, especially that and the other governorship and state parliamentary elections coming up February 28. As I'm talking to you, CPJ has been able to get in touch and contact, and people have reached out to over 20 journalists who have applied for visa to come to Nigeria, some of them as far back as September 2014. And the reasons being given for the delay in granting this visa is that they need security clearance, which is understandable and appreciated. Yes, it should be done. But what is going on? Nobody seems to have an idea. Journalists who have actually been told that they have been granted their visa, but embassies are not giving them the visa. People who have actually had visa in the past have visited Nigeria several times, talking about journalists from credible, internationally recognized media outlets around the world, France, England, the UK, South Africa, Nairobi, Netherlands, Japan, Asia, everywhere, Canada, it's the world over. So we are concerned that why does the government seemingly not want to allow journalists to take part in a process like the elections, which we believe everybody wants to be sure that it's free and fair.
Have you been able to have direct contact with a Nigerian government official about this?
Yes, I have. I've spoken to several government officials in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Ministry of Information, in the Nigerian Immigration Service, in the Presidency, even up to the National Security Advisor's Office. I have. And that's why I say it's foggy, because the context that has been said is being processed at the Office of the National Intelligence Agency. That is under the Presidency. Repeated calls, SMS, I've reached out to the staff who have said they will pass my message on to those concerned. I called back and said that I've not been able to. You know, it's just one story after the other, and it's worrisome. Why is it worrisome? Because by the INEC, that's the Electoral Commission, has just released its media accreditation guidelines, and it states categorically that all journalists should apply to be accredited by February 6, 2014. That is 2 days from now. And the INEC rep told me that, Peter, look, that's the challenge. That's going to be a problem because they have to be on ground to apply to be accredited. These journalists have to be in Nigeria. And how can they be in Nigeria if they're not granted a visa?
Now, I understand that some international journalists have been granted access. Is that correct?
Yes, there are some. That's not to say that we don't have journalists, foreign journalists in Nigeria already. We do. And the process for accreditation with INEC has just started. So we do have those. Well, we're talking about a host of others.
I understand that the Committee to Protect Journalists has also tried to contact the National Intelligence Agency, which is responsible for the security clearance and approval of the journalists. Is that correct?
National Intelligence Agency is under the Office of the President. So our reaching out has been through the Office of the President.
CPJ is also concerned about the safety of some journalists. You say at least five local journalists on Monday had been attacked in Gombe State.
Yeah, and that's also a very big concern to this run-up to the elections, because what we are seeing more often than not is the prevalent use of inciting language by politicians and their partisans. And this has genuine fear or concern by everyone that this could degenerate even to the point of electoral violence. And we are already seeing it in the run-up to the elections. A bomb went off. Several bombs have gone off. Not just this bomb. Several have been going off, both in the south part of Nigeria and the northern part of Nigeria. And it so happened that journalists this time around became the targets of thugs who believe that they have to take out any form of grievance by attacking anyone and everyone perceived to be an opposition or just anyone that can be an easy target. And that's what electoral violence is about. And that's the concern that journalists who will be there to document this electoral violence, journalists themselves become the targets of this electoral violence, because nobody, you remember, will not want to be documented as being the one who did an attack or committed a violation or an offense. So if they see you, the journalist, documenting it, you are obviously going to be the target. I am concerned. Everyone should be concerned.
Peter Nkanga is CBJ's West Africa representative from Abuja. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kepawa. And on a programming note, please join VOA for a special panel discussion called Nigeria Decides 2015 Elections and Security Challenges. It will be broadcast tomorrow, February 5th, from 1530 to 1700 UTC. Tune in on shortwave radio frequency 12045, or join us on the web at voanews.com. Only two-thirds of the funds pledged to fight the Ebola pandemic in West Africa have reached the affected countries 10 months after the outbreaks were reported. A study published by the British Medical Journal tracked pledges of more than $2.8 billion and found that only $1.9 billion has been delivered. Karen Gripian, an assistant professor of global health policy at New York University and the author of the report, says in a statement that those delays may have contributed to the spread of the virus. Gripian says early estimates of the cost of the fight against Ebola were too low and the donations were not deployed quickly enough. In her statement, she did not identify who was responsible for the delays. In Liberia, Doctors Without Borders has stopped testing an antiviral treatment drug. The Medical Emergency Service, also known as MSF, ended testing of the drug on patients after Chimrix, the manufacturer, said it would stop production. University of Oxford officials supervising the trial said the drop in the number of new cases makes it difficult to carry out effective studies. There is no licensed treatment for the Ebola virus disease that has taken approximately 9,000 lives in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. In Sierra Leone, some public officials are worried that the travel ban was lifted too early. President Ernest Bai Koroma ended the ban to improve economic trade as the numbers of new cases of Ebola began to decline. The mayor of Freetown says Mr. Koroma's decision was premature and could prove disastrous. We do not know who is safe and who is not, said Franklin Boed Gibson. The chairman of the Eastern Kinema District, Dr. Sensi Mansere, says lifting the traveling restrictions is a serious blunder at this point in time. A new study says the vast majority of unwanted pregnancies every year could be avoided if women had access to modern contraceptive methods. The finding appears in the online version of Human Reproduction. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
The study used demographic and health surveys in 35 low- and middle-income countries. That represents one-third of the world's population. It says 15 million of the 16.7 million unwanted pregnancies every year could be prevented. Dr. Howard Sobel is one of the authors. He's regional coordinator of the Reproductive, Maternal, Newborn, Child, and Adolescent Division at the World Health Organization's Western Pacific Regional Office. He spoke from the Philippines capital, Manila.
We looked at the risk of getting pregnant if they did not use any contraceptives, and we looked at the risk of getting pregnant if they used traditional methods like calendar rhythm method and withdrawal, meaning that before ejaculation, the person pulls out. And we compared that to those that used modern methods.
Modern methods include pills, implants, injectable contraceptives, and IUDs, or intrauterine devices. Dr. Sobel says many women who have unintended pregnancies face what he calls a stark future.
Let's just take their life potential. For every child that you have in a poor family, it's another mouth to feed, meaning that you have to spend more of the money toward that. Poor people end up having more difficulty in getting their children through school. They have higher dropout rates, lower educational potential, and ultimately lower earnings potential. So the cycle of poverty continues.
And then he says there's the health risk.
We're looking at a very high rate of increased risk for the mother of dying and being malnourished. We're looking at the same type of risk for every child also. When you have undesired pregnancies, it affects the family, it affects governments, and it affects society. If we could address this, then we could have a dramatic improvement in basically development worldwide.
He says greater access to modern contraception would also result in a large drop in the number of abortions. The study says women were asked to give the main reason for not using contraception.
The top reasons are really around myths and misperceptions. The number one and number two reason, which we lumped together, is fear of side effects and health concerns. The risk is not very high of health effects. Certainly getting pregnant, it's going to be something very taxing for anybody. And if it's an undesired pregnancy or two or three, that obviously has a bigger impact on health.
Dr. Sobel says many of the modern contraceptives have a very low risk of side effects. Other reasons given for not using modern contraception include underestimating the risk of pregnancy, infrequent sex, the idea that pregnancy is determined by fate, religious opposition, and concern about the cost.
There's a lot of low-cost contraceptives. They require repeated use and availability. But even in some of the more expensive ones, like the long-term reversible methods, such as implants, we're looking at a cost that's $14 or $15 a person, which lasts 3 years or so, versus having an undesired pregnancy. Well, I think that anybody, even in the poorest of countries, would agree that this is something that would be cost-effective for the family as well as everyone else.
Dr. Sobel and his fellow researchers say universal access to reproductive health was one of the Millennium Development Goals, but they say it is the goal that is most off track. The MDGs expire at the end of this year, and will be replaced by the Sustainable Development Goals. Sobel says strategic investment in methods like implants, though expensive up front, are far less costly to families, governments, and society than having larger families due to undesired pregnancies. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The leaders of South Sudan's warring factions signed a peace deal on February 1st in the latest attempt to end a conflict that has raged for over a year. Analysts say although this deal leaves a number of important issues unresolved, it could still be more promising than previous peace agreements. Hilary Hewler has more from VOA's East Africa Bureau in Nairobi.
The newest agreement between South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, signed after the African Union summit in Addis Ababa, includes few concrete details. The two have agreed on a ceasefire until they resume talks February 20th and have promised to finalize a peace deal by March 5th. But while the goals laid out are encouraging, experts aren't convinced that these negotiations will be enough to end a civil war that has already claimed more than 10,000 lives. There are signs that East Africa's Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, which mediated the agreement, may be losing patience with the two leaders. Neither has shown himself willing to compromise in the past. IGAD mediator Seyou Mesfin insisted at the signing, if either side broke this latest agreement, there would be consequences.
This time, if any of the parties violate this commitment and the agreement of cessation of hostilities, IGAD leaders have pledged to take severe action, but also to report the acts of violation to the African Union Peace and Security Council, and as well as to the United Nations Security Council on who has violated, and calling also to join taking action as IGAD is also doing so.
The two leaders have signed at least three peace agreements in the past, all of which were violated. But analyst Abraham Awolich of the Juba-based research organization the Sud Institute says signs from the government side indicate this one just might be different.
It seems like the government is committed based on the reports that we have seen, but we cannot tell what is going on the other side of the equation. So hopefully it is not like the framework agreement that they signed in May last year. This one, they have put some meat on it and they have said specific targets for when they can achieve this. So I'm hopeful, but I'm also cautious.
Awolich says that both sides' attitude will be crucial in determining whether the agreement has any chance of success.
There are a number of issues that we have to watch. First is the commitment of the parties to the cessation of hostilities. Number two is the rhetoric that you receive from both sides. If the rhetoric changes, and they are talking more in reconciliatory terms, then know that the parties have committed fully to resolving the crisis.
After the signing, Machar told reporters he and Mr. Kiir still disagree on several key points, including the structure of a transitional government. A number of contentious issues like this have been left vague, says Awolich, and there's no reason to assume that either side will agree to compromise.
Of course, there are so many blank spaces in the agreement. One cannot guarantee that they are going to agree on all this. The parties seem to have a tendency to harden their positions whenever they are given an opportunity to go on recess and consult. The hardliners seem to veer off the negotiators from the path that they had established.
UN Secretary of State Ban Ki-moon issued a statement Tuesday saying sustainable peace is impossible unless Mr. Kiir and Machar place the interests of the civilian population above their own. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Chaka Saleh, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.